Morning. Today's Daf and Yoma, Pei Gimel. We're in Pei Beis. We're in Pei Beis Amud Aleph. And God willing, today we're going to be caught up. Now, it's a prediction that I often make and not often comply with, but we'll try. I have a short Daf coming up ahead, Pei Beis Amud Beis, so we have a chance. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. The Daf was learned. Lezecha Lois Zaltzman Lupin. We are right on the edge of one of the big discussions that occur in Shas. It occurs here in Yuma, Daf Pei Beis, and it occurs also in Sanhedrin, the Gemara. Psachim also comes to my mind in terms of where else this is discussed, and that is the primacy of life and how life is going to, generally speaking, override any issue in the Torah. We discussed in the context of Yom Kippur, for obvious reason, a woman, for that matter, a man as well, who is really experiencing some difficulty fasting. And when I say difficulty, I mean sakanas nefashos, like it's her life is in jeopardy. So you eat on Yom Kippur. Even though eating on Yom Kippur represents a violation of the Torah, it's an issur karis, it's a very serious offense in the Torah, but nevertheless, so if life is in jeopardy, and if someone's life is at stake, so you eat, and it's that straightforward and it's that simple. The Mishnah talks about it in the context of Uvra Sheiricha. That's we'll see examples of this over the course of this morning, where the Mishnah's example is a pregnant woman. A pregnant woman who in general is in a precarious situation. She's very delicate, she's in a tender state where she's pregnant and she has her life to consider. I mentioned yesterday, obviously there's the fetus's life to consider, but in terms of halacha, her life is going to take precedence over the fetus's life. Her life is paramount. There's a discussion elsewhere where the fetus emerges, once the head of the fetus emerges, so then there are two competing lives with one another. But prior to that point in time, obviously her life is the one that is the more pressing issue. So she smells something, which means that she starts craving something, and Mishnah doesn't make any distinction if we're talking about a psychological illness or a medical illness. Whatever the case is, if she needs to eat, the Mishnah says she eats. And what we'll be discussing later this morning is, what if it's a difference of opinion between her and her doctor and another doctor? We'll discuss all that later on this morning. We're gonna see who's going to become the decider, the arbiter of whether or not she's in a precarious state or not. The Gemara, we are right at the edge of the Gemara. We are on Pei Beis Amud Aleph, and we're going to point out, as I'm sure we all know, that generally speaking, eating on Yom Kippur and more or less any other example in the Torah, one is going to violate the Yisurim in the Torah rather than forfeit his life. However, as the Gemara is about to point out, there are exceptions. There are three exceptions in the Torah, and they are, so let's see the Gemara inside. This is exactly where we left off yesterday. We're picking it up right from where we left off. She'ein lecha davar. It's about 8-9 lines from the bottom of Pei Beis Amud Aleph. She'ein lecha davar she'omei b'fnei pikuach nefesh. There is nothing that stands in the way of pikuach nefesh chutz, except, and the exceptions are avodah zarah, gilui aras, shvichus damim. So the big three, well, we call them the big three simply because of this Gemara over here, and the Gemara Sanhedrin, and the Gemara Pesachim as well. The big three, avodah zarah minalan, and now sources. How do I know? How do I know that given the choice between your life or avodah zarah, so you're supposed to give up your life? You forfeit your life instead of violating avodah zarah. Detayim milant and abraisa, Rabbi Elazar Omer, im nemar b'chol nafshecha lama nemar b'chol modecha, v'im nemar b'chol modecha lama nemar b'chol nafshecha. Right, we say in the Kriya Shema that we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol meodecha. So there seems to be somewhat of a redundancy. B'chol meodecha means all your means. Chol nafshecha means with your life. So, right, yeah, like in those old movies, your money or your life. So you're right. So, and the Gemara basically says, you know, the choice may not be so obvious for some people. There are people out there in the world who love their body more than they love their money. Okay, I would generally tend to think that's everybody, but it's not everybody, but that's most people. So that's why the Torah says, okay, so you who love your body more than your money, so obviously that means that you're going to be giving up. You under certain circumstances, you have to give up your body. And some people actually choose their money over their lives. And that's why the Torah says Chol Mo'odecha. Anyway, but let's not miss the most important point. Meaning, it's funny. We run through this Gemara, and I understand money or your life, but the most important point, however, and the point that the Gemara is making over here is that v'aftas Hashem Elokecha, that you have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And someone says to you, okay, I want you to be over to Avodah Zarah, that obviously is counter the Avas Hashem, that goes right up against Avas Hashem. And what does the Torah say? B'chol nafshecha. Meaning even at the expense of your life, you're supposed to give up your life rather than violate your Avas Hashem, which would be worshipping idolatry. So the Gemara says, good. So that now is a source in the Torah where one is supposed to give up their life rather than be over to Avodah Zarah. But we have two others now that we need a source. One is Gilui Arayos and the other is Shvichas Damim. Illicit behavior. When we say illicit behavior, we mean very specifically Gilui Arayos, meaning acting, having relations with one of the women who were mentioned in the Torah in Parshas Achrimos and in Parshas Kedoshim, where the Torah deems to be an erva. So if given the choice, one is supposed to give up their life rather than commit arayus. And the same thing with Shvichas Damim as well. And the Gemara is going to illustrate an example in just a second. Menalan Detanya, the Gemara says, for that we're going to have another braisa. Rabbi Omer ki kashir yakum ish al reu uritzacho nefesh kein hadavar hazeh. Gemara over here quotes from Parshas Kiseitzeh. And in the Parshas Kiseitzeh, the Torah's discussion over there is about rape. Rape specifically of an Avanara Murasa. A woman who's betrothed, meaning she's married, basically. Murasa means that she went through the first stage of marriage, not the second stage of marriage, but for our purposes, for our discussion, she's married. And the Torah speaks out that a man rapes a woman who is an Avanara Murasa. So the man who commits the act of rape, so he is in violation of arayos, he's sleeping with a married woman. The woman herself who was raped, so obviously she's a victim. She's not put to death, obviously. This is a classic example of being an ones. This was against her will. So obviously for her, there's no punishment, obviously. There's no liability. So the Torah says, you know what it's like? And the Torah makes the comparison. Meaning the Torah says, Ki kasher yakum ish al re'eu ritzacho nefesh kena davar zeh. It's no different, says the Torah, than murder. When a man murders another person, so the victim is a victim. Now, he's dead now, but the point is that he was a victim. He was involved in a murder, but involved in a murder as a victim. Obviously, he has absolutely no liability, and there's no onus for him. And unfortunately, he's no longer alive. But same thing, says the Torah, regarding a woman who was raped. In other words, she was totally a victim. So, v'chi, now, okay, that's a powerful comparison, the Torah, but we're coming at it from the standpoint of, what are we learning from this comparison? Why does the Torah equate the two? V'chi ma inyan lamadnu, just give me one moment, mei rotzeach l'nara murasa. So, what are we learning from Ritzicha to nara murasa? Obviously, the Torah is trying to communicate something to us by putting these two acts together, side by side. Elahare zeba lame v'nimsa lamed. So the Gemara says that we're actually going to go in both directions. We're going to learn from Shvichas Damim to Nara Marasa, and we're going to learn from Nara Marasa back to Shvichas Damim, meaning that there are two points that are going to be developed. Ma Nara Marasa niten lahatzila benafsho. In the case of Nara Marasa, so she can save herself. Meaning, if given the opportunity, if given the ability, so she can save herself. Nitan lahatzila binafsho. And even, meaning you could save her, if the act can be prevented, you could save her even at the rapist's expense. Meaning that what you could do is you could actually put the rapist to death prior to the act, not after the act. In other words, the Torah here, the Gemara here is not saying that you can, that this is a, that you could take his life after the act of rape, but prior to that, in prevention, you can, right? That's exactly the Gemara's point. You could take his life. Now, this isn't exactly Rodef, by the way, because he's not going to kill her, he's going to rape her. So it's not exactly Rodef, but she is an Ara Marasa, she is a married woman. The act would constitute a rias, and so therefore you can intercept and you can intercede, and even at his expense, even at his life. Afrotseach, So the same thing is going to be true by Ritzicha. Meaning by Ritzicha, we have now this concept of Rodef, where a man is chasing another man and prepared to kill another man, and you, meaning by when I say you, I mean could be the victim, it could be a bystander, and somebody can intercept and stop and prevent the murder from occurring. So you do so even at the expense of the potential murderer's life. Okay, what we would call being a Rodef, and Nita Latzila Banafsho. And you can even save the victim even at the expense of the life of the attempted perpetrator. Marot Seach. Okay, that is that's lesson number one. So lesson number one is that just like in the case of Nara Amarasa, you can intercept and save her at his expense, meaning even if it means killing him. Same thing is true with Ritzicha, with murder, that you can intercept even if it means that you're going to kill the attempted perpetrator. And then, just give me one more moment. No, it's okay, I'll pause. Ma rotzeach yareg val yavor, af nara marasa yareg val yavor. And then the Gemara says, and what are we going to learn in the other direction? Just like when it comes to Ritzicha, yareg val yavor. Meaning somebody gives you a choice. Here's your two choices now. Either you kill, or you'll be killed. In other words, I want you to kill him, or I kill you. So I either violate the Issur in the Torah of Ritzicha, or I allow myself to be killed. So the Gemara says in such a scenario, you allow yourself to be killed rather than commit the Issur of Ritzicha. So that's true by murder. And now we're going to go in the other direction. Now we're going to go back to Nara Marasa. Af Nara Marasa, Yereg Val Yavor. Same thing is going to be true with Nara Marasa, Yereg Val Yavor. If given the choice, somebody points a gun to your head and says, I want you to sleep with that married woman or I'll kill you. So then you allow yourself, you allow your life to be extinguished rather than violate the Issur of Arise. So that are the two points that we're going to be learning, one from the other. One is we're going to go in the direction from Nara Marasa to Ritzicha, in that you can intercept and take his life away to prevent the Issur from occurring. So that's true by Nara Marasa, it's also true by Ritzicha. And the other direction is that if you are given the choice of either violate the Issur or be killed, so you don't violate the Issur neither of Ritzicha or because the Torah equates the two, Nara Marasa, or for that matter, any Arias.
So this is
those are classic questions. That's a hashkafic point. Meaning that's not a halachic point. That's from the halachic standpoint, the halacha is really going to be focusing on the act that's going to be perpetrated. All the antecedents and all the and the context of it all are important, and they are not to be understated or diminished. But the Gemara is really interested in the act itself, and not the antecedents to the act. And the Gemara doesn't really put that into consideration. Yes?
How about on the other hand, with the woman protecting herself
in this case? Oh, so now you're touching on an issue which, if you take a look at Tosfos, so Tosfos is Amud Aleph, Tosfos is Amud Beis, Tosfos has a very lengthy discussion, meaning that the Gemara just says that if a man's choice is either you commit the act of Arayus, I want you to engage in illicit relations, or have your life be extinguished. So the Gemara says, so given the choice, the choice he has to make is, I need my life to be extinguished, meaning this is one of the big three, this is Arayus. So now, if you look carefully at the wording of the Gemara, I'm not going to really get into this, but I will raise it, you did bring it up. If you look carefully at the reading of the Gemara, it says that af marotzech yareg val yavor, af nara marasa yehareg val yavor. And if you read the words of the Gemara really carefully, yehareg val yavor, it's written b'lashon zachar, it's written in the masculine, meaning a man is supposed to give up his life rather than commit the act of Arayas. For him to commit the act of Arayas means he has to do an action. He's not a passive participant, he has to do an action. What if it were a woman who does not need to do an action to be involved in the act of Arayas? She is a passive participant. Examples of that we have historically, we have a number of examples. Esther and Dina. Right, and Dina, and we just had in the Haftarah. The Devorah, Yael, Okay, there are a number of examples of that. And is it the same for a woman who doesn't have to be actively involved in the Issa of Arayos? So that is one of the topics that's discussed in this very lengthy Tosfos. It's a lengthy discussion. Anyway, but it's worth noting. Absolutely worth noting. Now, there's one other point, right?
What is their conclusion?
The Gemara in Sanhedrin describes a woman as passive. I mean, the Gemara's terminology is karka olam, which means that she's a passive participant. So the conclusion is it's not totally clear. And then part of the Tosfos discussion is, well, let's see if we can think of a parallel scenario in murder. Meaning, if someone's asking you to be involved in a murder, but you don't have to do anything, it's hard to imagine such a scenario. But if you could imagine such a scenario where you don't have to do anything, you're going to be a passive participant in the murder, so then maybe the same thing would be true. Maybe then you don't have to give up your life because you're not actively violating the Isser of Ritzicha. It's simply just passive. Okay, so again, that beyond the scope of the daf, but those are the things that is really occupying a lot of this real estate on today's daf. Or I should say, actually, more accurately, yesterday's daf. Not discussed in the Gemara. I mean, to be honest. I mean, it's talked more in terms of seduction, but now that issue isn't really addressed, not to my knowledge. Okay, and one other point, which is an important point, which I paused in the Gemara, but we have to complete the circle. Meaning, what are we saying? That just like in the case of murder, one is supposed to give up his life rather than commit the act of murder, so too in Arayos, one is supposed to give up his life rather than commit the act of Arayos. Okay? But then the Gemara says, well, how do we know this is true by murder? Meaning, how do I know that if somebody gives me the choice and somebody says, either I kill you or you commit the act of murder, how do I know I'm supposed to give up my life? Where does that come from in the Torah? V'rotzeach gufe, we're on the top of Pei Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara now is just simply finishing the logical argument. V'rotzeach gufe minalan, how do I know that this is true by Ritzicha? So svarahu, so the Gemara says, that's a svar, that's an argument. The Gemara says, da'ahu, da'asalakame de rabba. Somebody goes in front of Rabba. Amarle, mari dure katle lapanaya. So he says, let's discuss the following scenario. Let's say mari dure, the officer of the city, okay, in other words, somebody who's powerful, who means what when he says this. And that is, katle lapanaya, I need you to kill so-and-so, v'ilo katle nalach, and if you don't, I'll kill you. In other words, the choice. Either you take his life or I'll take your life. So what should be the resolution? The ilo katlin alach amalei niktalech. So Rabba says, allow yourself to be killed velo tiktol, and do not kill somebody else's life. My chazi says the dama didach sumaktfei, because now basically you're going to be deciding whose life is more valuable. So the and Rabba's answer, and Rabba says to him, and who are you to decide? How do you know that his blood is redder than your blood? Dilma, I'm sorry. How do you know that your blood is redder than his blood? Dilma, dama, dahu, gavra, sumaktfei. Maybe his blood is redder than your blood. Period. So in other words, when it all comes down to what's the starting point of the discussion, how do I know that Beritzicha, one is supposed to rather give up his life than take somebody else's life? So the Gemara's answer to that is as far as an argument. And the logical argument is predicated on you cannot choose whose life is more valuable. Now again, in a scenario where your life is, right, you were given the choice of either actively taking his life or passively allowing your life to be taken. So basically now you get to choose. So the Gemara says you don't have the right to choose. So you allow the passive taking of your life rather than actively taking somebody else's life. Okay, that's the starting point for the discussion. Then the Gemara says, and now we'll take it to Nara Marasa because, right, and then we'll take it to Nara Marasa because the Torah equates the two in Parshas Ki Tse. Another big discussion, right, Hedy, just to fill in one more big discussion on this topic of the big three and giving up your life. What if you actively give up your life rather than violate any one of these Isurim? Meaning the Gemara's examination over here and conclusion is that one is passively to give up their life. So in other words, the choice is either I kill you or you kill him. Okay, so you passively allow yourself to give you passively give up your life rather than take somebody else's life. What if you want to not violate any one of these three, but in order to do so you have to actively give up your life? Is that okay? That's a major discussion. That's a huge discussion. The Gemara does not discuss it. It's discussed in the Rishonim. Tosfos here discusses it. The Rambam discusses it. The Rambam's position, I hope I'm doing it justice. The Rambam's position is that you cannot. You cannot actively give up your life for any one of these. And Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says no, that one can actually actively give up their life rather than violate these three. Okay. The Rambam, right? It's in the beginning of the Rambam. It's in Yesod HaTorah. Rambam says it's a terrible sin to actively give up your life, even for one of these three. You only passively you're allowed to do so. The Rambam's language is if you do so, if you actively give up your life, you're mischayev benafsho. So then you're going to have to, right? You're liable for that. Now, I know you're not alive anymore. I understand, but okay. In other words, that's you know. But that's the Lashon HaRambam. Again, I'm paraphrasing. I'm not. I don't have it in front of me. Well, for no. In other words, it's not hard to find a case. Unfortunately, very often it was the time historically where basically they knew they were coming into town and they knew they would be asking to do things which would either you know
to prevent.
And so basically the choice was made of right, Masada and then. Historically, unfortunately, too much history about such cases. Okay, back to the Gemara. Those are the big three, and the Gemara got into this discussion today simply because the Mishnah says you can eat on Yom Kippur. Now, eating on Yom Kippur is not one of the big three. Eating on Yom Kippur is, and it is basically the general rule, which is that I am supposed to give up. I'm not supposed to give up my life for any Yisur in the Torah. Except for the big three. And that means that if my life is in jeopardy on Yom Kippur because I'm fasting, so don't fast and eat. And now we're back to the discussion of eating on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says we are on Pei Beis Amud Beis. And Hahu Uvda, right in the middle of the Amud. I mean, it's a small Amud. Five lines from the bottom of the Amud, beginning of the line. Hahu Uvda da'archa. A woman had a smell. She and that smell led into a craving, and that craving was basically going to be critical to her life. So Asla kamed de Rebbe. So she goes in front of Rebbe. So Amar lehu zilu lechushula de yom dekipurahu. So Rebbe has an interesting approach to this issue. So again, as we know, the halach is that you can eat. But Rebbe says, why don't you do the following? Why don't you have somebody go over to her? Now, it's interesting. He doesn't do it himself. He instructs somebody else to do it. But unsure why that is. But he has somebody go over to her and basically approach her, whisper in her ear, today's Yom Kippur. Okay. So, l'chushula. So, somebody whispered in her ear that today's Yom Kippur. And v'ilchasha. And it worked. And she basically, her craving went down. And she was assuaged, and fine, she didn't need to eat. So, Kari Allah, Beter Matzarech, Bebeti Medatich. So, on that, they now cited the following pasuk in the beginning of Yirmiyahu. Before you were created, I knew you in the womb. Meaning that this was a pregnant woman, and by a simple whisper, the craving went down. And basically, they understood that something special was forming inside of her. And what was that something special that was forming inside of her? Nafik Mene Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara gives us the postscript to the story that fetus that she was pregnant with was none other than Rabbi Yochanan. Gemara tells another story. Another woman who was pregnant.
Is that what you found
in Zakai? No, I assume Rabbi Yochanan meaning of Reish Lakish. Oh. That Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. I assume so. The Gemara tells us another story of a woman who was pregnant, and she smelled, which then led to a craving, and she really desired to eat food on Yom Kippur. Also, coming to Rabbi Chanina, she goes in front of Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina said, "Look, I heard of such a story. I heard this happen with Rabbi. Rabbi's an earlier generation. So Rabbi Chanina says, I'm going to try the same thing. So lechushula. So he whispers in her ear, v'lo ilchasha." But it didn't take. and she wasn't assuaged and she wasn't pacified and she still needed to eat, and so she had to eat. And the Kari Aleha, and so now you understand how the contrasting cases are now working, where now we're going to look at the fetus inside of her, the developing fetus inside of her, and they quote the following pasuk from Tehillim, Zohar Rishayim Meirechem. I know the Rasha from the womb. It's interesting, the Gemara does certainly provide philosophical challenges in terms of good and evil that are congenital. So I realize those are philosophical issues, and I don't have an approach, and you'll forgive me, of course. But, okay, obviously they present problems. But nafik minei, Shabtai, Otzer Peirei. And now comes Shabtai, who was Otzer Peirei. Otzer Peirei literally means that he hoarded fruit. He was a manipulator of the market. Take a look at Rashi, Lafkia Sha'arim. Basically, his purpose of hoarding food was to affect and to manipulate the market. V'tanya inotzen peres beretz Yisrael v'chol davar shu chai nefesh lefi shemafkinas Sha'arim. Because once you hoard fruit, so then now you are you're creating an imbalance in terms of supply and demand. Once you create an imbalance, so therefore the prices go crazy. And you cannot do that in Eretz Yisrael. It's interesting. It does say Eretz Yisrael as opposed to not being in Eretz Yisrael. Whether you're allowed to manipulate, hard to imagine, hard to understand. But anyway, fine. But but that's what he did. And again, the Gemara takes us all the way back, not to his childhood. The Gemara goes back to his in utero experience, where while his mother was pregnant with him, so his mother demanded to eat on Yom Kippur. And the Gemara says, and look what, and she couldn't be assuaged, and look what came out of her.
Okay. So they blame the fetus for the action of the mother?
The answer is yes. Correct. And I realize the way you're presenting the question is that's not right, and I understand that, and I'm acknowledging that I hear you, but the answer is yes. In fact, you could go back to Rashi on the bottom of the previous Amud, Kibla Talachisha Shepasak Ha'uber Mitavaso. Rashi says it. Rashi says that yes, they're blaming the fetus. Okay. Okay. Discussion that goes from here until the Mishnah. Now we're in Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. We're at the two dots, and we are now discussing basically when does she eat? If her life is in jeopardy, she eats. Good. That we got. But how do we know her life is in jeopardy? Who's going to make that determination? I'm going to remind one another, myself included, what the Mishnah told us. If you look back on Pei Beis Amud Aleph, so the Mishnah says that Machilno so al pi bikin. The Mishnah says that if there are doctors, now again we're going to assume the Rambam writes this, and it's pretty clear from the Gemara as well, that when the Mishnah says baki means an expert, but expert in this context means a physician. So the Mishnah says that Machilno so al pi bikin. You feed him based on the advice of doctors. Now the Mishnah does say plural, and the Gemara is going to note that, and the Gemara is going to wonder why the Mishnah is talking in plurals, as if to say one doctor's opinion is not enough, which doesn't sound right and isn't right. So we're going to discuss exactly why the Mishnah uses the word bikiyim, and then the Mishnah went on to say v'imein sham bikiyim. Now that if there are no doctors, ma'achin also al pi atzmo, so then he can say, look, I'm really not feeling well. I'm really feeling faint right now. I need to eat. So then you feed him, even though there's no professional medical advice supporting his position. Doesn't matter. His position is going to be good enough, says the Mishnah. Ashi Omar Dai, until he says he had enough. Now, okay, that's the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says either a pair of doctors or his own input. The Gemara now discusses. We're on the top of Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. So let's say the doctor says he needs to eat. Sorry, let's do it correctly. If the ill person himself says I need to eat, and the rofe omar ainot tzarich, and the doctor says he does not need to eat, shomem lechola. Okay, so there, despite the fact that the doctor's right there, and the doctor says he's fine, don't worry, I've seen this before, we're good. So, but he's demanding that he needs to eat. We listen to him and we feed him. So, my time, so the Gemara says because a person knows himself well, right? He's listening to his body. He's filling himself out. And despite the fact that the doctor right there says this is not an issue, let's not worry. his concern will allow him to eat on Yom Kippur and override the Isser of eating on Yom Kippur. So Pshita, the Gemara says, now isn't that obvious? Ma'od etem, arofa kim lutfei. And the Gemara says, look, the Havamina, we could have gone the other way in the Havamina, meaning the doctor's right there, the doctor knows what he's doing. The doctor's a professional. So the Gemara says, kamash malan. So that's the Chiddush, meaning, okay, that was the Havamina, but the Chiddush is that even if a person is contradicting a doctor, nevertheless he can eat. Rofe omar tzarech v'chola omar enu tzarech. Now let's say the argument goes in the other direction. Right, doctors, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, where the doctor says, no, he's not well. And he says, I'm fine. Let's you're making a big deal about nothing. So, shomim l'rofe. So here you listen to the rofe, you listen to the doctor, meaning that now there's justification to feed him on Yom Kippur. Now, again, you can only force him to do so, we can only force him to do so much, I understand that. But in other words, from a halachic standpoint, from a, can we feed him? Yes, he can. Meaning the doctor's opinion will override his own opinion, and the doctor can say that he's in critical condition. My time atun v'hu denakilei, because we assume that part of his illness also may manifest itself psychologically, and that even though he's saying he's okay, but the fact of the matter is he's sick, and the illness may corrupt his thinking, he may not be thinking straight, and so therefore, he will be allowed to eat because the doctor says he needs to eat.
If a patient is force fed through an NG tube, let's say, right, is that patient like really eating?
Right. That's I know there's a lengthy discussion about that. I don't know where to send you in terms of that discussion. But they're right, correct. In other words, it's the act of eating on Yom Kippur, however, may not be limited to achila because the Torah never says don't eat on Yom Kippur. The Torah says don't. And you must afflict yourself on Yom Kippur. So, and obviously this will provide him. Okay. Anyway, if you're really interested, I'll do research. I'll tell you where to go for that discussion. So the Gemara just simply points to our Mishnah. Now our Mishnah says that a chola you can feed him al pi bikiyim with the assistance of doctors, meaning with the advice of doctors. So al pi bikiyim al pi atzmalo. Now, that's only with the advice of doctors, but not on his own advice. Now, that is interesting. Well, I'll pause right now in the Gemara. That is interesting because the Gemara is making a deek in the Mishnah. However, if you read one more line in the Mishnah, and we did just a couple of minutes ago, you'll know that the Mishnah says, if he says he needs to eat, so then you feed him. But maybe, meaning at this juncture of the Mishnah, of the Gemara, maybe that means without anyone contradicting him. But what we're trying to analyze right now is what if he's being contradicted? What if he says he doesn't need to eat, but the doctor says he does need to eat? So what would be under those circumstances? So I'll be bikin in, I'll be baki echad lo. So the Gemara says, and furthermore, if you look at the Mishnah says you need a pair of doctors. What if it's one doctor wouldn't seem to be enough? So the Gemara says, Hach ben maizkin and damer lo tzrichna. So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says that in the case of the Mishnah, he's rejecting. He's saying, I don't need. The doctors are saying, no, he does need. In that circumstance, the position of the doctors is going to override his position. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's say there aren't a pair of doctors. Let's say there's only one physician. And the one physician says he needs to eat. And he is saying, no, I don't need to eat. The Gemara is basically asking, that's not enough? Meaning, we are not going to take the medical advice into consideration and say that he needs to eat? And what do you want to argue right now? That it's one against one? As the Gemara just pointed out, doesn't matter. Meaning, it's the doctor's opinion, which he's coming from an objective standpoint, and it's his own opinion, and as the Gemara just pointed out, he may not be thinking straight. He's sick, he's ill. So part of that illness can affect his thought process. So he's not even thinking straight. So the Gemara is saying, the fact that the Mishnah is talking about where there were two doctors against his one opinion makes it sound like that if there was one doctor against his own opinion, we would choose his position over the doctor's position. But the Gemara just told us, right, it was the opinion of let me give proper attribution. It was Rav Yonai. Rav Yonai's position is it doesn't matter, one against one. He's not thinking straight, and so therefore we would listen to the doctor. So the Gemara says, "Lo tzricha dika achrita ba'day, damar lo tzarech." So the Gemara says, "Well, his position is corroborated, meaning it's not just him against the doctor. If it were just him against the doctor, so then the doctor's opinion would win out, and he would be able to eat on Yom Kippur. Again, I know he's saying he doesn't need to, and it would be difficult to feed him, understood. But in other words, from a halachic standpoint, we have every right to attempt to feed him based on the input of the doctor. The doctor's position is going to weigh over his own position. The case in the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says, I need a pair of doctors, is talking about where not only is he demurring, and he rejecting the advice of the doctor, and he's insisting that it's okay, but he's actually corroborated by another physician, where the other physician is also saying, yeah, I think he's okay. So under those circumstances, so then it will be, then we will favor his position, but only because he's being corroborated.
Yeah, the doctor is going to say that the guy needs to, based on the sakana that he does it, his life is in danger. Is that only like presumption?
Yeah, I mean, they're right, correct. In other words, the only issue over here is whether or not he has a halachic right to eat on Yom Kippur. I mean, that's the only...
No, but that's based on sakana. Like his
yes,
life is
correct, correct, correct. That's the whether or not his condition is critical enough where if he doesn't eat, so his life is going to be in jeopardy. So the Gemara says, okay, diicha achrina ba'adei, da'amar lo tzarech. So machin also al pi b'kiyin. So the Gemara says, so now under those circumstances, so now, he's saying he doesn't need to eat. Another doctor's corroborating and saying he's fine, he's okay. And now, if I have a pair of doctors counter to their position, who say no, his condition is critical, no, he needs to eat, then from a halachic standpoint, he now has every right to eat, despite the fact that the patient himself, together with another doctor, is arguing that he's fine. That he's fine. So the Gemara says, when all said and done, what's going on right now? But there's a disagreement. And yeah, one of the people who happen to be disagreeing happens to be the patient himself. But there's a disagreement in terms of whether or not he's in critical condition or not. So what do we, in halacha, what do we call this? A suffix. And not only is this a suffix, but this is a suffix pertaining to somebody's life. Generally speaking, we always err on the side of the person's life. And we will take caution, even if it's just a suffix. And even though a doctor's saying he's okay, but aren't we always going to take into consideration that his life could be in jeopardy, and isn't that enough to warrant eating on Yom Kippur? And what bothers the Gemara right now is that this point is so obvious. What do I need the Mishnah for now? So pshita, suffik nefashos, v'suffik nefashos lahakal. We're always making when it comes to suffik nefashos. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you where the chiddush is in the Mishnah. The chiddush in the Mishnah is where two doctors are saying that he needs to eat, and on the other side, two doctors saying that he doesn't need to eat. So it's two against two, and we can also throw him, the patient himself, with the doctors to say that he's fine. So now the Gemara says that's a chiddush, and we are going to err on the side of caution, and we are basically going to now try our best to feed him. But the point is that even in that case, we're going to err on the side of caution. So the Gemara says, look, when it comes to edus, when it comes to testimony, so a group is a group is a group, right? Well, when we get to Makos, we'll see this at length. The idea that I have a group of edim saying one thing, I have a group of edim saying another thing, and there when it comes to edus, it doesn't matter what the numbers are. As long as each group represents at least two witnesses, so you have two witnesses saying one thing, three saying another, two saying one thing, 100 saying another, it's one group against another group. But in the case of umdana, but in the case of assessment, so when we're talking about assessing something, we're going to follow the majority viewpoint. The Gemara says, Hani mililing in umdana de mamona. Yeah. When it's a financial assessment, so the Gemara says, but when we're talking about somebody's life, so here I don't ring up the numbers. Two doctors say he needs to eat. Three doctors or two doctors and the patient say he doesn't need to eat. Okay, so this is two versus three. The Gemara says, when it comes to the issue of suffik nefashos, we don't do any type of computation. We don't look at the equation as two say one thing, three say another thing. We don't do it that way. Rather than what we do is we simply say it's a suffix. We have a group of physicians who are saying he's in critical condition, he needs to eat, even though they're being contradicted by another group. Even if that other group is a greater in number, it doesn't matter. This is still considered suffix nefashos, and so therefore he eats.
What about greater stature?
Right.
What did the two that say you shouldn't eat of a greater stature then?
doesn't seem to matter. I hear the argument. Doesn't seem to matter.
What's umdana de mamona?
Umdana de mamona, like for example, appraisals. When somebody is in foreclosure and he needs to pay back a debt, and there's an appraisal, and basically, well, how much is that worth? And the Gemara in Erechin has a lengthy discussion of how we do appraisals, but basically, there's a discrepancy between the two appraisers. So who do we follow? So generally, we follow the majority viewpoint of how that should be appraised. That's mammon. But in the case of nefashos, we don't operate with that kind of thinking. You don't need two doctors. What the Gemara is pointing out now is that in the case of our Mishnah, we're using the example of two doctors because they're contradicted by another group of doctors. But once they're a group, it doesn't matter. Their position... One doctor against the group, right? Unsure, unclear. I don't know.
It's not good because we had two against one with the picture.
Right, the picture correct. Correct. That his position would seem to be overridden. The one. But now once it's a group of doctors, and then at that point it no longer matters what's on the other side contradicting their viewpoint. Their position now is a registered position, and therefore we're now in the category of suffik nefashos. No, but that's the thing, though, and that's what Hedy was asking. Meaning, it sounds like from the Gemara, one when contradicted by another group would be cast away. Okay. Sorry. So the Gemara says, well, hold on one second. In the last case in the Mishnah, he was voicing an opinion. And the Gemara is assuming, wasn't that always true in the Mishnah? Wasn't he always voicing an opinion? Mechlal deresha damar tzarich. And that means that in the first case of the Mishnah as well, he was voicing an opinion. The Gemara says, look, the way we're going to understand the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is incomplete. We're going to fill in the gap in the Mishnah. And basically the gap is filled in the following manner. Ba'med var mamorim damar lo tzarich. Ani. Aval amar tzarich ani ein sham bikim trey elachad. The amar lo tzarich. I'm sorry. Let me go back. In the case of the Mishnah, where it basically says that if the doctor says he needs to eat, he'll eat, that's in a scenario where he himself doesn't say anything. So, but if he says he needs to eat, ein sham bikim, trei elachad, da amar lo tzarich, ma'achin lasa al pi atzmo. So then you feed him on his own accord.
So even if he's one... If it's him against 100 doctors, he's still...
No. The way the Gemara is presenting it right now is that if it's him against one, so then he'll be able to eat. If it's him against any medical position of greater than one, two or greater, and it's just him, then he does not get to eat. That's what the Gemara is presenting right now. That's the first position of the Gemara. Mar bar Rav Ashi amar... Kol hecha da amr tzarechani, afilu ika mea da amr lo tzarech li didei shaminan. And Marbar Rav Ashi disagrees on this last point. He says, no, that's not a correct way to understand the Mishnah. In the scenario where he says he needs to eat, if he's contradicted by 1, 2, or 100, it does not matter. Marbar Rav Ashi is of the opinion that his position is going to override all we're discussing is the viability of eating on Yom Kippur, meaning the halachic allowability to eat on Yom Kippur. We're not really discussing medical treatment. We're discussing whether or not Yom Kippur can be overridden on his behalf. So if he says he wants to eat and the doctors are saying no, so the Gemara says under such circumstances, Mar Bar Rav Ashi says he can override 1, 2, or 100 positions. Shenamar leyodei maras nafsho. The Gemara quotes the pasuk that we quoted earlier today. You know, a person knows himself. Tanani main sham bikin ma'achin laso api atzmo. So time of deleka bikin high ika bikin low. So the Gemara says, okay, but Mar Bar Rav Ashi, what do you do with the end of the Mishnah? Because at the end of the Mishnah, the simple reading of that Mishnah and the simple diuk of that Mishnah is that if he declares himself that he's in critical condition, he eats. But only if he's not contradicted. A simple reading of the Mishnah is that once he gets contradicted by the group, so then he doesn't get to eat. So the Gemara says, Hachi Kamar. No, this is how we'll understand the Mishnah. Ba'medram amam darma lo tzarech. No, the medical opinions that he needs to eat is when it's not contradicted by him. Ava Omer Tzarechani, but if he says he needs to eat, Ein Sham Bikim Klal, so then we pay no mind to any medical opinion. He says he needs to eat. He says he's in critical condition. We listen to him. We feed him on Yom Kippur. Ma'achino so api atzmo shenem alev yodem maras nafsho. Okay, so basically, to make a lengthy story somewhat shorter, in terms of the allowance of eating on Yom Kippur, so the doctor says he needs to eat, he eats. Doctor says he needs to eat, and contradicted by another doctor, so then we are in a then we get into a discussion of suffik nefashos. If a doctor, if he's going against the doctor, where he says he needs to eat, and the doctor says no, he does not need to eat, so we listen to him. If he goes against a medical group of two or more, so then we have disagreement in the Gemara, where the first opinion in the Gemara is that their positions, the medical opinion of two or more, are going to override his own opinion. That's one position. And then there's the opinion of Mar Bar Rav Ashi, who says no, that his opinion that he needs to eat and that he's in critical condition is going to override the two who are disagreeing with him. Correct. And important to note, that's the accepted position, meaning that in terms of allowing to eat on Yom Kippur, even if he's contradicted by a group of physicians, he is still allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. Well, no, the Mishnah, if anything, the Mishnah does not agree with the point of Mar Bar Rav Ashi. The simple reading, and that's what the Gemara just got done explaining, the simple reading of the Mishnah doesn't agree with that. Because the simple reading of the Mishnah has it where he says he needs to eat, but he's not being contradicted. But if he were contradicted by Bekiin, by a group, so then he wouldn't be allowed to eat. So Mar Bar Rav Ashi has to work his position into the Mishnah. He does so, but it's, you know, but the Gemara noted that that's not the simple reading of the Mishnah. Okay, we start with the next Mishnah. We are moving ahead in the Daf Mishnah Achso Bulmos. So let's say a person is gripped with a medical condition known as bulmos. It does sound a little bit like bulimia. I'm not a physician. I don't pretend to be one. I can only give you, I can only make, you know,
hypoglycemia.
You are a physician. you can make these you can make these educated guesses. I'll share with you Rashi says chole ha'ochez machmas ravon, he's very hungry, ain of chaos, his eyes are dim, v'hu mesukan lamos, and Rashi describes this as being a critical condition. So machil aso afilu dvarim tameim achi oru einav. So you feed him. Now the Mishnah is now going to basically move away from Yom Kippur and just basically say, whatever you need, whatever is available to eat. Now either the Mishnah is describing where it would be advantageous to him to eat non-kosher food, although I'm not sure if that's the correct way to understand the Mishnah, or just simply, we don't have anything else. All we have right now is non-kosher food. The point is, ma'achalos asuras, it's non-kosher food, you can feed it to him if it's a critical condition. You're bitten by a dog, basically it's a rabies bacteria. They had a treatment in the good old days, where basically what they would do is they would kill the dog, remove the kaved, remove the liver, and feed the patient the liver of the dog.
Original vaccination.
Okay, all right.
It's the original vaccination.
Right, that was the... So the Tanna Kamma says, ain ma'achilin. So the Tanna Kamma says, don't do that. And Rabbi Masya ben Charash Matir, Now what it seems to be the argument in the Mishnah is the efficacy of such treatment. Meaning, if the treatment were to work, obviously, it would be fine. That's supported by the previous point in the Mishnah. Where the previous point in the Mishnah is, the person who was suffering from the bulmos, you feed him whatever you need, whatever's available. Non-kosher food is there, you feed him. So if the treatment is effective, then there's nothing to discuss. It could be what's that issue over here in the Mishnah, and we're going to see this in the Gemara, is that what the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Masya ben Charash are arguing about is whether or not this is effective treatment.
This
is not related to Yom Kippur. The Mishnah now is just simply saying, Yom Kippur is just an example of, you can violate an Isser in order to preserve life. The Mishnah now is just simply saying, and it would be true by other Isserim as well. Let's say somebody has some sort of pain in their throat. So you could take medicine on Shabbos. It's going to override the Shabbos. Let's say a person is buried under rubble. And you don't even know if there's survivors underneath the rubble. Suffic chai, suffic mace. You don't even know if the survivors are alive. Suffic kusi, suffic yisrael. You don't know if he's a Jew or a non-Jew. Mefachin alav esagal. So what you can do is you can dig out the rubble, even though it is a suffic sheba suffic sheba suffic, in terms of whether or not you're going to recover somebody, a survivor, an actual survivor, it doesn't matter. Matsu chai, mefachin. Now, let's say while digging through the rubble, you see that you found a survivor and he's alive. So then you keep digging. Obviously, the Mishnah is setting us up for the next point. But well, let's say you're digging through the rubble and now you uncovered part of his body and you see that he's dead. So yenichu. So at that point in time, you call off the rescue, you stop digging, and you no longer violate the Shabbos because his life is no longer salvageable. What's coming up ahead of us? So some of the most basic discussions. One of the most basic discussions that's coming up, we're going to see it tomorrow or the day after. I guess we'll find out, is basically how to determine whether or not he's alive or he's dead. The Mishnah says, I started uncovering his body, and I see that he's no longer alive, so you stop the rescue mission. And what the Mishnah does not say, and the Gemara will discuss, one of the most basic discussions coming up, is how do we know that his life has actually been terminated? And so we will touch on tomorrow Shabbos. I forget offhand, but we'll see it. End of life issues, and how do we know that the person has actually passed on?